I'm here with Representative Doug Ricks. He's a Republican from Rexburg and just finished his first session at the Idaho Legislature. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, well, thank you, Brandon. I appreciate being here this morning.
Now, kind of a long session, third longest on, tied as the third longest on record. How would you sum up this session?
Well, you know, it was a learning experience for me being a new legislator. And yes, it did go long. It was the third longest session. It went 95 days. The last couple of weeks seemed to be just drag on. There was a lot of people were ready to be out of there, and I think tensions got a little high, and there was a little bit of, I don't know what you call it, fighting, but a little bit of back and forth between the Senate and the House on some of the bills that and a lot of them died in the Senate
right.
for us there. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good session. There was certainly some things we didn't get done, but there's a lot of good things we did get done as well.
What were some of those good things?
So good things, as you know, Medicaid expansion was a big item this year, and we did get that bill passed. Took a few tries on bills back and forth between the House and the Senate, but we finally did get that passed, and the governor signed it. There's some good things that are built into that Medicaid expansion bill. And as you know, in Idaho, there's estimated somewhere, when we got talking about this, 61,000, but then we started hearing this figure that could jump up to 90,000.
That's right.
Always been the risk is, does that jump up so high and increase the burden on to the state and compete for dollars for other things like education? And so we did put some conditions on that, some provisions, to have some minimal work requirements. And some of those work requirements are that basically, you know, those that are receiving the Medicaid expansion, we want to make sure that there was some work there. However, there are some exemptions. If somebody is going to school, going to college, or under 19 or over 59, or if they're, you know, person's pregnant or have a medical condition, a sickness, or if they're seeking a job, you know, getting job training, there's a lot of exemptions to that work requirement. Idaho had come up with their own Idaho way, and it provides that you only have to have 20 hours a week on that, and so of work conditions. But there's no lockout period. There's also a lot of people who are on the exchange in the 100 to 138% of the poverty level. They can choose to stay on the exchange if they don't wish to go on the full Medicaid.
And that gives you more options, I imagine, if you stay on that exchange.
It does. Some of it has to do with maybe a personal pride thing. They do get large subsidies anyway, so the premium itself is not very much. But not everybody is going to want to go on the Medicaid for their health care.
What were some of the points of contention that were frustrating as a new legislator for you to see, maybe the bureaucratic process or other things that you noticed?
It takes a lot of work to get something passed because you've got to get, you know, people in a committee. Each bill will go through a particular, they're assigned to a committee, and it's got to pass that committee. It's got to get out on the House floor, for example, where I'm in the House, and get passed there, and then it's sent over to the Senate. Their committee vets it. They have to pass it on the floor, and then the governor has to decide whether he's going to sign it or not. It's just, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in between, and these bills, once you get them out there, once it's, you know, printed as a bill, then anybody can see it. It's on the website, and so you have different groups that will maybe come in that might be opposed to it, and so they'll bring people in to testify against it, and it makes it interesting. For example, I'm on Judicial Rules mm-hmm. Committee, and we had a couple of bills that brought in large groups of people to testify. One of those had to do with changing some the law and updates in the landlord-tenant law. So there's some provisions that really need to be updated and changed in that. But we had a large number of people come from the Boise area, and a lot of their testimony that in opposition to it didn't really relate to the bill itself on the conditions we were doing, but their big thing was, well, they didn't want rents to go up, or there's a problem with high rents, and over there it is much more expensive to live than it is here, and that is a concern. But some of the things we were trying to change in the law didn't pertain to that, but they were against it, and they get their talking points, I guess, from a few people that, you know, get them this knee-jerk reaction that we got to go defeat this and defend it, and so they do. So you have a lot of larger groups that come out for that.
Do you think there should be a way for citizens to testify remotely in the future?
I know it's done on a limited scale. It's been done a few times. That would be a nice thing to have that option. So you get maybe more of a sampling throughout the state and different areas. It certainly is more effective if you can show up and be right there in the meeting itself. But I do like that idea. Other than that, I might be a little concerned that, we'd have to set a timeline for taking that testimony. Otherwise, we might not get anything done.
That's true. Yeah, you can only take so much.
Right.
What was the biggest thing you learned this session?
You know, I spent a lot of time trying to make connections with other legislators, to talk to them, to find out a little bit about them and show some interest. And I know on a bill, you have to get so many people to vote for your bill in the House and so many in the Senate. You know, you need 36 in the House and 18 in the Senate, and then the governor to sign it. And so you've got to convince that many people that what you're trying to propose in legislation is important. And so by spending time talking and visiting and building those relationships, it does help, I think, in getting some of your legislation through. And I was successful as a freshman. You know, they tell you to sit back and listen and learn. And, of course, I did a lot of that, but I just can't sit back and not do anything. And so I had a couple of bills that I did sponsor, and I got through. And, in fact, I had zero no votes on both of those bills, which I thought was really good because I they weren't real controversial bills to begin with, but we did have to overcome some stuff in the Senate to get it passed.
Right. Yeah. That's good to kind of get that behind you and have that experience. So next session you can do even more.
Yeah. So next session, I look forward to it. There's a few other things that were really good. I thought were wins this session. We increased spending funding for education. Over the last 5 years, the legislature's been stepping up the funding for education and increasing at least an additional $100 million step in that, in addition to the, I can't remember exactly the percent, it might be 5 or 6 or 7%, something like that, but the $100 million was on top of that. So there's been a commitment. There's been over 35% increase in spending over the last 5 years into education. That's huge. Our total budget this year for education was around $1.8 billion.
Yeah, it's a big number.
It's significant. And so, but we added a career ladder. The career ladder was funded. The teacher starting salary was boosted to $40,000.
And that goes over the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's a two-step. It's 38 and then 40. But there's also some career technical education programs that were improved this year. We didn't get the new funding formula figured out, or at least we didn't all come into agreement on that, on how that was supposed to be. I'm not on the education committee, but I do talk to other legislators who are on that, and there's concern. We want to make sure that school districts, especially in remote areas, smaller districts, don't get left out on that funding.
Right. Yeah. And that's one that takes a lot of voices to come together and understand the nuances of how funding it this way will affect it and doing it this way will affect it. So
yes,
more discussions to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was an effort to try to do that, and there has been an interim committee for the last couple of years going over that, but you have the school districts, they get their business managers to look at the numbers, and they're all weighing in on that, and everybody says, hey, We want to make sure we don't lose money in the process. And the intent was that nobody would actually lose any funding in that. But there's, we just got to make sure that there's a wide-scale buy-in on that, that everybody's okay with the new formula.
Yeah. Any surprises for you this session?
I was a little surprised that the governor vetoed the ballot initiative measure. The legislature fought hard to try to, I guess, put some conditions on what it is required to get a ballot initiative on, I guess, the ballot. We're concerned that there's maybe four counties, Ada County, Canyon, Kootenai, and Bonneville County, because they're the largest population centers, that people going out for ballot initiatives could just get signatures from those areas only and kind of leave out the rest of the county, so they wouldn't have much say in that to get some of these initiatives on the ballot. And so there was a movement and some bills passed that changed that, and we had kind of a battleground that we ended up taking, or a hill, so to speak, taking in this House and Senate, and then the governor vetoed it. So,
yeah, this bill was very contentious.
Yes.
I know Democrats were strong against this, and several Republicans in both the Senate and House representatives joined with Democrats to vote against those. And I mean, Senate, it passed by one vote, and
right.
In the House, it was by 10. Do you think they had legitimate concerns about some of these restrictions that would, or not restrictions so much, but changes to what we currently have?
Yeah, in Idaho Constitution allows, you know, for the legislature to pass bills and do the business of the state, but it also has the ability for the citizens to pass ballot initiatives. There's been a big push nationwide in some of the states to get maybe some of the more liberal social type agendas on ballot initiatives, and Idaho was looking, and so are other states, to kind of put more conditions on there that you have to have a little more broad participation throughout the state on the signature process. And in Idaho, for example, the Medicaid expansion didn't have a physical note on it. That's one of the conditions we were trying to put on that, that you had to have a way to fund it. So Medicaid expansion passed in Idaho, but there was no mechanism like an increase in sales tax or some other method to fund it. And so we're having to scramble and figure out, okay, do we pull money from this budget, which is roads? Do we pull some from education? We're always struggling to fund education. We're trying to get teacher salary up to a point where we can retain our teachers and not lose them to some of the surrounding states. And so that was one of the main things we wanted to get on there and just have more participation. But, boy, that did come under a lot of opposition from people, and some of the same crowd that testified against some bills we were working on also came and testified against that one, too.
Anything you learned from this process that could help you next year in the session?
Well, just going through the process once, you gain a lot of experience, and so I'm ready to hit the ground running. There are several bills and things that I've already have committed to work on for next session and look at, and I'll keep looking at things during the off season here. I did do something on the House floor that was I guess, kind of unique this session that I don't know anybody else did. We had we were getting ready to go home, and then there's always a bill that we pass that allows the governor to spend a little bit of money in our absence. You know, legislature, it's our prerogative to fund and spend the money. But in our absence, we already have a bill on the books that allows the governor to spend about $18 million to cover any shortfalls in budgets, because we're still estimating how much money's coming in, and
right.
There's been a little bit of a shortfall you've read about, I'm sure. And so there was a bill that came through the JFAC committee to give the governor up to $140 million authority which would tap in and would have at that time taken a lot of our reserves that we had. If he needed to use that, we have a rainy day fund that has about $400 million plus in it. But there was $270 million that was going to be taken out of that and used for transportation, and then the governor was going to have the ability to spend up to the rest of it, and so it made some of us concerned. I was a little unsure how to vote. I ended up voting for it. It was a very, very close vote. It only passed by two votes. And then I got a little bit about buyer's remorse and got talking to a few people about that, and I found out that you could do a motion called reconsider your vote. And so I did that, and we had to have a vote on that motion to reconsider this bill. Uh-huh. And that the motion passed by a margin about 4 or 5. And then later that night, we were going to turn around and re-vote on the bill the following day. But during that evening, the budget analyst people, chairman of JFAC, decided they figured out that maybe they didn't need it, or that they found $40 million more that would go into the general fund, which kind of left me scratching my head on that. But so they actually, the next day, rather than vote on the bill, they pulled it back to committee, which kills it too.
Yeah.
And so I actually did something there that I thought was good. And anyway,
yeah,
it was interesting.
Yeah. What do you hope constituents know, or what should they know about this process, or about your role as a legislator?
Well, what constituents should know is that, you know, we're here to serve the people in Madison, Bonneville County. District 34 covers that, and there's a lot of good legislators from here in eastern Idaho, and we're here to represent the people and to try to do what's right for them. And so people can contact us. You know, a lot of the bills come from ideas from constituents. One of the bills that I had come from a constituent from Iona area on levy disclosures. But people, their voice does count if they contact their legislators and let us know what concerns them. And oftentimes we can put that into action and maybe affect changes that need to be put in place.
And it's really easy to find your information, legislature.idaho.gov, and
right.
Your phone numbers and emails, all there.
Yep, or just go out and Google one of our names, and it'll come right up. But we're happy to help out what we can. We're here to serve the people, and you know, we want to do the best we can and stay focused on the constituents, the people here in East Idaho. That's our focus.
Great. Representative Doug Ricks, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great. Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate it.